National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Well, the new year has just begun, and controversy continues in the Church. The Vatican loses its two key spokespeople, and a new letter reveals the depth of the challenges within the Church over holding bishops accountable in the clergy sexual abuse crisis. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register Rome correspondent Edward Penton. And then, looking back at 2018, was there any way that good could come out of such a terrible year? We hear from Dr. Janet Smith. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio, going solo with Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and my co-host is away on maternity leave. Most of us were pretty happy to say goodbye to 2018. It was a time dominated by the clergy sexual abuse crisis, and 2019 seems to have picked up right where the last year left off. To help us start off the new year with all the news from the Vatican, and there is a surprising amount of news, even in the first days of this new year, I'm joined by Edward Penton, Register Rome correspondent. Edward, welcome back.
Hi, good to be with you. Happy New Year, Matthew.
A happy New Year to you, too. I think for a lot of people, certainly around the Vatican these days, this probably isn't the start to a happy year, is it?
Well, no, it sort of ended badly and hasn't begun so well either. And we've had this latest shake-up of the Holy See press office, of course, which came unexpectedly. And so we've got quite a few sort of changes, I think, in the offing, certainly from the outset.
Yeah, and then we have the news regarding Cardinal Mark Ouellette that I know we want to talk about. There's also the sort of a return to an older scandal of Father Maciel. So the clergy sexual abuse crisis does seem to be dominating, and all eyes are turning toward February and the summoning of the heads of the Episcopal conferences from around the world by Pope Francis to try to deal with this. What are you hearing, let's put it that way, from Vatican officials about this February meeting? Because everything seems to be pointing right toward it.
Well, this is, as we know, this sort of came towards the end of last year. I think there's a sense of a need for this meeting. I think that's certainly been recognized. But I think there is also a sense that this is primarily being driven by the United States because of course, the serious abuse stories that came during the past year. And I think they feel that this is really, I suppose, sort of more US-led than anything else. But that doesn't obviously diminish the importance of this in any way. And I think there is a sense of urgency to really discuss these issues and actually that action comes from. It's not just a talking shop, but actually some action really does happen and that things are really taken hold of and actual things really made for the better. So I think there's certainly a commitment there to do that. And I think this latest issue regarding Cardinal Ouellette's letter, I think has been mainly made public really just to kind of clear the air and set the stage really for the meeting so that it can start off on the right foot.
Well, a lot of people were surprised that type of a letter would be made so public, leaked as it was, the Associated Press. One of my questions is, first, have you had a chance to see the letter?
I haven't read the whole letter yet, no. No, I haven't seen it.
But it's filled with a number of canonical questions and issues that were raised. But it also points to what could be interpreted by some, at least, as a real disagreement between the Vatican and some of the U.S. bishops, in particular the leadership of the USCCB, in how to confront the crisis. But there's also the sort of overhanging question as to how seriously Vatican officials, at least from the appearance, seem to be taking the crisis, or are they dismissing it as sort of an American obsession?
Well, I mean, as I said, yeah, I think there has been that attitude. And I think you can see that in some ways in the way the Vatican has responded to this. And I think it's also interesting, of course, in the Pope's end of year curial address on just before Christmas, that when he exchanged Christmas greetings, his annual message, that he made this very much an important part of that message. So they're getting aware of it. They realize the depth of the anger in the United States and elsewhere. And I think they're coming around to it. So I think there's the signs of hope here, I think, that this meeting will bear fruit. But as people have said, you know, that unless the issues, I think two key issues people want to see raised. The first of all is the one of homosexuality, which people think must be addressed if that's going, if this meeting is going to have any success. And the other one is it's the responsibility of bishops and holding them responsible. And if those two issues aren't discussed, I think many people will feel it's been a waste of time. And whether the Vatican is getting to understand those issues and will put them at the front of this summit, I think we're just going to have to wait and see. But I think there are signs that they're beginning to take this more and more seriously.
Mm-hmm. And as part of that seriousness, is there also a recognition of the global aspect of this? I note, for example, the appointment of Cardinal Oswald Gracious or Gracias to this four-member committee that's trying to craft the agenda and the logistics for this meeting. Is he bringing what the Vatican will hope is a more universal understanding of this problem?
Well, I think that is part of it. I think that certainly to bring in somebody from the developing world is considered to be helpful. But I don't know how much that's going to be significant in the whole scheme of things. I think certainly that's part of the Pope's vision, is to bring in not just the West, but other countries as well. And I think that's part of it. But we don't really know what they've got planned yet for this meeting. And until we do, we don't know how broad and universal it's going to be.
And there's been a bit of discussion on the membership of this committee as well, including, as it does, the American cardinal of the Archbishop of Chicago, Blaise Supich, as well as Archbishop Charles Scicluna and Hans Zollner. The presence of Cardinal Supich, how would you interpret that?
Well, I think he's someone who has the Pope's ear. He's very close to the Pope. I think he's I'm told that he could get an audience with him anytime he wants when he comes to Rome. And so I think the Pope has chosen someone whom he trusts. Other people have also said that maybe it's element in the Pope which isn't so fond of the United States. I don't know. Some people think it was done to spite the American church in some way. I think the Pope has been briefed by some people to say that the American bishops are largely against him. So I don't think he particularly sees the U.S. bishops particularly favorably, or at least he hasn't until now. And I think he just wanted to choose somebody he knew and whatever the consequences of that might be. And so he chose Cardinal Supich. That seems to have been how this happened and how the Archbishop of Chicago was chosen.
Mm-hmm. And the other two members of this committee, Archbishop Scicluna and Hans Zollner, I think everyone can agree are genuinely recognized experts in this crisis, right?
Yes. I mean, Archbishop Scicluna has had a long, long track record of this and is respected in this field because of the investigations he's led in the past. So that's certainly a natural choice, although there have been some question marks over his leadership in Malta regarding Amoris Laetitia and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I think on the abuse case, I think he's seen as a respected figure, as is Father Hans Zollner, who has led this child protection monitoring organization in Rome, and I think he's also on the commission for the protection of minors. So I think both of them are very much seem to be accepted and expected people for the commission. Well, who people did expect was Cardinal Sean O'Malley to be on there, but the commission is being consulted, so whether he has some sort of behind-the-scenes role in preparing this summit, we don't know, but that's probably the case.
And we're seeing, as a backdrop to all of this, the ongoing reform of the Roman Curia, or the central government of the Church. And there was, at the very start of the year, I should say, actually the very end of 2018, I think it was on New Year's Eve, that the announcement was made of the resignation of Greg Burke and his chief deputy, Paloma Garcia Ovejero, from the Sala Stampa, or the Vatican Press Office. First, was that expected in any way? And what are the ramifications of that kind of a resignation?
Yes, well, that wasn't expected. And I think people are sort of looking at this as perhaps a sign that the Vatican wants to take the communications in a different direction. These resignations came, they were made by their own choice of Greg Burke and Paloma Garcia. And I think they chose to go, and I think they felt that the Vatican communications were being directed in a way that perhaps they didn't agree with or didn't match their own vision, and so they felt it best to resign. But it's a very short tenure for them. They'd only been there 2.5 years almost. Usually Vatican spokespeople do seem to last a long time. So there was some surprise at that, but various reasons are given also for the sort of the lack of matching visions, if you like. Also because these two were both very much journalists, and I think there was a sense that their natural habitat was in journalism and not as PR people. And I think there was that as well coming into the equation.
Yeah, and the ad interim press spokesperson, Alessandro Gisotti. What do we know about him briefly?
Well, Alessandro's worked. I remember when I worked at Vatican Radio now 15 years ago, but he was there and he's had a long time working at Vatican Radio. He's a very able man. He's written books as well, one on President Obama and his faith. So he's actually quite a respected figure, and I think very much is going to toe the Vatican line. There's no doubt about that. I think he's very much keen to do that. Interestingly, he was very much present during the Synod on Youth and very much there sort of behind the scenes, but also you saw him very much present in the press conferences. So it's very much, I think, a natural fit for him and for the Vatican, I think, to have him there. But I think it's only temporary, and I think they're going to be looking for somebody perhaps with better linguistic skills, I think. I'm not sure how his linguistic skills are, but somebody who's perhaps better qualified in that sense to take over the reins probably in the next few months.
And it's rather striking, isn't it, that this is increasingly an all-Italian shop, isn't it?
Yes, that's interesting, Matthew. That's true. It used to be a bit like that in the past. Of course, we had Joaquin Navarro-Valls, who was the spokesman, who was Spanish under John Paul II. But I think these were kind of anomalies, if you like, and it's sort of switching back now to very much an Italian-run organization in the Curia, not just in the communications either.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Edward, thank you so much. We look forward to your reporting in the new year.
Thanks, Matthew. Good to meet you.
Well, when we come back, I talk to Dr. Janet Smith about the sex abuse crisis, the role of laity in the church, and how we can find bright spots in the gloom. This is Register Radio.
Don't miss a moment of 2019. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. With the Register, you'll get the real story behind the events that unfold over the course of the year. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. Want to continue your subscription after your free trial? Just pay $49.95 and you'll get a total of 26 issues filled with spiritual insights on world events, along with compelling Catholic news and information. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/NYR or call 800-421-3230 and mention code 919-NYRA. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio. Going solo this week while my co-host, Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief for the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. My next guest recently wrote, quote, "Seeking holiness, whatever does not advance a pursuit of holiness needs to be purged from our lives. Please, bishops, respond to the graces of your office and be the leader Christ begs you to be." The author of that is Dr. Janet Smith, who holds the Father Michael McGivney Chair of Life Ethics at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit, and I am delighted to have you joining me today. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, the title of your piece was Year of Scandal Brings Glimmers of Hope Amid Bleak Revelations. You can find that at ncregister.com. And what I loved about the subtitle of this is, until the corruption is eradicated, the church cannot be the force for saving souls that it is meant to be. There is a sense, isn't there, today of a marring, a disfiguring of the church's place in society, but also how people see the church, isn't it?
Oh, yes, and especially by those who love her the most. I think we're the ones that are, if you want to say it, suffering the most. You know, it, and that, I mean, I followed the sex abuse crisis from way back, back in the 80s when The Wanderer was writing about it in Crisis and Fidelity magazine. And at a certain point, I had to suspend certain subscriptions I had because I thought it was too salacious and I couldn't handle it, honestly. And then I read the several of the expose books written in the early 2000s. And I said to myself, oh, surely if I know this, the bishops know this. And surely they're doing what they can to clean things up. And but what I mean is a presence of men, priests who want to, who are having sex with other males, all right, who are have an unbelievable control over diocese. And I thought, well, surely the bishops are cleaning this up. And when the sex abuse crisis came to the fore in 2002, and people were saying, oh, the bishops just don't get it. They just don't get it. I said, oh, you've got to be kidding. Any healthy heterosexual male gets it. This is horrible stuff, and it has to be stomped out and anything else that's related to it. And then this year, McCarrick comes forward, and everything breaks loose, and I say, oh, my gosh. They aren't doing anything about it. They haven't been doing anything about it, and it's worse than any of us thought. And it was just like this huge, painful epiphany that many, many people I know and are experiencing. And we are people that we've devoted ourselves to the church. We love the church. This is no hatred of the church, believe me. And we love the priests and we love the bishops. But there are too many that are not seeking holiness for themselves or for their people. And if we don't get it right this time to clean it up, it is going to be decades and decades of more getting nowhere. All these people who have tried for all these decades to reform the church in so many ways, better education, better sex education, better marriage prep, better new evangelization, and it just gets stalled. You put all this effort in it, and you don't get the backing and the support. You get a lot of patting on the head and a little bit of, you know, patting on the back, and you go, girl. But no real assistance on, by the church itself. And so, and by the church itself, I mean the bishops. And so I have always hated statements say the bishops this and the bishops that, you know, mm-hmm. as if we're in a position to judge and we paint them all with a broad brush. But I've gotten to the point where I say that a lot, and I think it's appropriate, I'm sorry to say.
I had the feeling that at the end of the bishops' meeting last November, when they defeated even what was just a basic symbolic resolution mm-hmm. asking Pope Francis to release all the documents pertaining to the McCarrick scandal, that there was this collective, oh, come on the part of a lot of Catholics across the country. But I noted that that sort of sentiment was pretty present even among a lot of the bishops. So I know that you deal with a lot of bishops. Are you also getting a sense of real frustration from some of them at what they seem to be this inability to get our handle on this?
Yeah, I'm not as close to the bishops as people think. I mean, I've rubbed shoulders with them over the years, and with a few of them I've worked on projects, but there's nobody calling me with any regularity asking for my wisdom, which is just a shame.
Yes, it is.
No, I'm teasing. But I really don't have the ear of many, if any, bishops. Bishops do respect me. If I make a call, they might take it. But some bishops do, and I'm grateful for that. But and I'm trying to use that judicious that privilege and honor mm-hmm. judiciously. But I'm afraid to say, as I've said in other writings, and I do hate to say this, that almost every bishop has been complicit in some way. All right, they have inherited dioceses that are not in good shape, and they've inherited a culture that doesn't really provide them with much of a mechanism for doing anything about it. And in many dioceses, they would lose a lot of priests if they decided to get to invite either to reform or to leave the priesthood all of those who are being sexually active. They might have quite a dent in their presbyterate, and that's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing to lose priests. We need priests, and the laity will be very upset, rightly, that some parishes might have to close and projects might have to close down, and it will not be a pretty picture. Mm-hmm. So they've tolerated a lot. They've tolerated a lot because, again, there's an atmosphere and a culture. And they have to buckle down and decide, have they made the right calculus? Have they made the right calculus that it's preferable to keep priests who are not living by their vows in the priesthood, manifestly so, for very long periods of time? These aren't just lapses. These aren't just moments of weakness that I think the laity are very forgiving of. But these are men who have lived a lifestyle for 10, 20 years. They own condominiums in the Bahamas and Miami, and they go there to meet their boyfriends, and it's not a good thing. And I'm sorry to say, I think there's a fair number of bishops who know about this, mm-hmm. and they don't do anything about it because they're afraid of getting a shortage of priests, which there already is, so a greater shortage of priests, and anger among the laity that don't want to lose their priests, even the ones who are corrupt. They'd rather have their parish church available to them than have a corrupt priest gone. We've seen that now in several places. So we have to buck up the laity and say, yeah, these are going to be, if we do the right thing, these are going to be some lean years as far as availability of priests. But in the long term, it's going to really purge the church and make for a glorious church. Many, many more young men will come forward, and I think many of the good priests that are out there will rise to the episcopacy eventually. And we will have priests who are living their vows very devoutly and ready to really promote what's good in the church. They've been tapped down. They've been silenced. They've been marginalized. So it spreads a long way.
Well, and you've hit on something that I really wanted to talk to you about, because there is a sense of frustration and even anger on the part of a lot of lay people. But there's also a question that I'm often asked myself on radio shows and people that I meet, asking, okay, what can we do as lay people to help this situation? Yeah. I usually respond by saying, well, first, we all have to be holier ourselves. We're called to that anyway, but especially now. But I know that you and Al Cresta and others are working on helping laity to understand what is our role in the life of the church.
Before I talk about people who are in a position to have some influence and maybe even power, I want to talk about the Catholic who is busy at home and busy with family and everything, and other things are going on. That's not their position in life. I mean, as you said, they do have to keep praying and seeking their own holiness. But I think a very important thing is for them to talk to other Catholics when the sex abuse crisis comes up, and maybe even bring it up and say how they will never leave the church, that this is Christ's bride, and as right now, as the troubles that it has, it's the only place we can receive the sacraments, and never, ever, ever leave the church, never, and to give witness to their strong devotion and commitment to staying in the church. And I think they need to write to their bishops, and when they see an article or something that really upsets them about what's happening in the church, that they send it to the bishop and encourage him and ask him, please, to do whatever he can to make a change in the church with some regularity, maybe once a month, write your bishop. Now, you mentioned that, and then I also think I'm going to write a piece one of these days, and I know, you know, those titles, usually, as you know, the headlines, usually we don't write, the author doesn't write, and I like that headline, but I know they won't let me use this one, but I'd like to do a headline that sometimes says, "The moment for the testosterone-laden male, the Catholic layman, has come." And I can see so many strong men, fathers of children, some of them 5, 6, 7, 8 children, and more. And they've had it. They've had it with the possibility that their children or any children might be preyed upon, not just children, but their boys and their sons when they go into the seminary, and their sons when they become priests, and their daughters at any point. And they've had it. And they're not going to leave the church, but they're fighting not against the church, but for the church. And these are men who have lots of skills like yourself, journalists or radio hosts and FBI agents and retired FBI agents and detectives and lawyers and financial auditors. And they're putting all of their skills to bear. And a lot of people don't see this happening now, but it is happening, and it's happening all over the United States, that they are bringing all these skills to bear to figure out what to do about this situation. How can we put our skills to work to clean this up? And, of course, this doesn't eliminate lay women like myself. I'm on a group of women who teach in seminaries, and we're putting together a strong statement on how we think the education of young men in respect to chastity and respect to clericalism and even some reforms in seminary structure might help make for stronger priests when they get ordained. So there's all that going on. There's much, much more going on than most people know. Things I've tried to keep, believe me, an eagle eye on this whole thing. And still regularly, I'm delighted and surprised at initiatives that I haven't heard of that come to the fore. And it's a really good thing. And you mentioned that I'm working with Al Cresta on a group that's with a group that's called No More Victims, Michigan. And, there's a website, No More Victims MI, Michigan. And we're trying to work with local victims in our own diocese and help them negotiate the process for getting redress. It's been absolutely eye-opening to us about how the episcopacy responds and how much care victims need, how genuine and beautiful they are. Those who stay with the faith, I'm sure even those who leave, but those who stay and believe so much, even though they've been so treated so very badly in so many ways, it's been absolutely edifying to me to watch people. A young man who was abused by a local priest here, I actually went to a session he had where he very formally forgave the priest mm-hmm. who had abused him.
Remarkable stories, I know, are all out there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. But I am so grateful for your time today. And I would encourage everyone to read your piece, A Year of Scandal Brings Glimmers of Hope Amid Bleak Revelations, at ncregister.com. Dr. Smith, I look forward to having you on again.
I do, too. I look forward to being on. Thank you.
Well, that concludes our episode today for Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks so much for joining me here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Jeanette DeMello and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, please take care, God bless, and Happy New Year.